Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like $1 million.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Trans lesbian centaur porn is my new kink.
Oh my god, not this one that's pregnant.
I want to set the scene for all of you virgins listening at home right now. Fran and I are in a wintry wonderland. We are both wearing huge fur coats.
Huge.
And just off in the distance is a fawn.
A shirtless fawn.
A shirtless twink fawn.
Well, I would say otter. Otter type.
Otter, right, hairy.
Yeah.
Well, I'm goat.
Goat.
off in the distance is a fawn. And then also off in another distance is a talking beaver.
Hmm.
Oh, wait, now they're getting closer together. Wait, oh now the beaver is sucking the fawn's dick.
This live fan fiction you're writing. This was against my consent. I did not know this is where you were going.
Well, where I'm going is to the magical land of Narnia.
Because
today we are talking all about The Lion, the Witch, the Wardrobe, the Twink, the Otter, the Twunk, the Daddy, the Bear, the Fisting Top, the Fisting Bottom, the Piss Queen, the Pillow Princess,
Shut up.
The Wardrobe. Because this is like a virgin, the show we give yesterday's pop culture today's takes. I'm Rez Damu.
And I'm Fran Torrado. God, how did we get here?
Happy Thanksgiving, virgins. We hope that you are surrounded by your family, whether they be biological or chosen.
Yes, we hope that you are celebrating anti-imperialism and that you understand that this is a wretched little holiday that has great food, but otherwise is founded in a history of, you know, colonialist violence.
You know what I am disappointed in, though, is that, like, this year I'm going to my family in Connecticut, and I just go out for the day, but everyone else there, you know, kind of stays throughout the weekend because they live there. I don't usually get sent home with leftovers, and to me, that is one of the best parts of Thanksgiving, is eating the leftovers for a couple days and, you know, doing, a sandwich with turkey and stuffing and cranberry sauce on it. So I'm like, where can I get one of those? Because I will not be fulfilled with just having it one day.
No. My favorite tradition is to make, a giant sandwich, the next day. With, normal sandwich bread, but, roasted turkey, cranberry sauce, cheddar cheese. All of the things that, you want to put on a Thanksgiving meal. So good. Wait, speaking of leftovers. How, did you by chance see Triangle of Sadness? I don't think you saw it, right?
I still have not seen it. I, at this point, probably won't see it in theaters, but we'll catch it
right
on digital at some point.
Okay, I don't want to talk about it, but I just want to quickly, like, just, you know, assign you homework and maybe the Virgin's homework to watch it when you can, because when I saw the trailer, I was like, that seems kind of, like, too on the nose. The trailer makes it feel really cheap, right? It's like, this is the movie that eviscerated the upper class, an amazing critique on capitalism. And I was like, I don't really want to watch that. And then I actually went to go see it, and it's like one of the most amazing things I've seen on screen in a very long time.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad to hear that it was good.
It needed an editor, let's be clear.
Sure,
it
is, most things, all things do.
It is insufferable.
We do.
But
thank
it
God
is,
for Phoebe.
It was so, and Rose, I'm not going to spoil anything. There's just something that happens in the midpoint that is so shocking and something that you never forget. Like, it's just an, it's something that happens in a movie where you're like, I will never forget this. Anyways, that's all I'll say so that we can actually discuss it, you know, whenever we end up watching it. What have you been watching this past week?
You know, I'm neck deep in my annual Gilmore Girls rewatch. You know, I have been in the middle of moving, so I really don't kind of have any patience for anything more than that. It's just been a lot of Gilmore Girls on in the background while I unpack boxes.
Ash is watching too. Maybe I'll need to hop on and
you should
start
finally
for the first time.
Get into it. Okay. Yeah. But I did go to the movies last week and saw Wakanda Forever.
So did I.
And I had so much fun at it. I think the impression that I was left with most was that, oh my God, everyone in that movie is really hot.
So fine. Fine.
Namor is the mother I never had. He's the dick everyone should suck. The ass everyone should eat.
I literally, like, it doesn't matter how many memes I saw about him before seeing this movie. Nothing. Could have prepared me for what I felt in my body when Namor ascended from the sea. His winged little mercurial Hermes wing ass feet, fucking gay ass mermaid god, fucking
his little speedo,
and his like indigenous Mayan ass ancestry, and his accent, and his thick little body. Oh my God, I was alone in the theater, clutching my face and physically breathless. That's not an exaggeration. I was physically out of breath. What are the things that stuck out from you from the movie? Like, fave parts or things you didn't like, maybe, or...
I really liked Riri Williams. I thought she was a welcome addition.
And so good.
I thought it made sense to bring her in because with Chadwick Boseman gone to the movie, you know, Letitia Wright had to step into the lead role and couldn't be, like, the, like, smart, wisecracking sidekick anymore. And Riri definitely filled that position while also being a very compelling character with her own story. And she has a TV series coming, so we'll get to see more of her. And I really liked the dynamic between her and Shuri, which was, like, they definitely were into each other. There was a vibe. Angela Bassett really chewed every scene she was in. You know, that one scene where she is yelling at Okoye, you know, about how she's lost everyone in her life was devastating. And, you know, she gave an incredible performance. And I thought Letitia Wright did too. I thought, you know, this movie had this tremendous weight placed on it of having to not only honor Chadwick Boseman's legacy, but, like, deal with it in a way that was narratively fulfilling. Yeah. And so much of that was put on the shoulders of those two actresses specifically. Yeah. And I thought they really, you know, rose to the occasion.
I mean, I agree. I thought that, like, given the circumstances, like, everyone in the film really carried the responsibility of something that is kind of impossible to do from a media perspective, which is translate real life grief to franchise grief. Like, that sucks. I feel bad for everyone involved. Like, they had to literally, like, 3 months later, like, hop into this and, like, play grief on screen. And, like, part of me, like, I do love the that this film was about grief, and I felt like it was a resonant meditation on grief. But I also do wish that they could have just waited and given it some space so that, like, everyone involved could have, like, I don't know, had more time with it. Because, like, I thought the burial scene was gorgeous. I did not need to see Chadwick Boseman's grave ascend into, like, a spaceship. Like, that at the end, I was like, I feel crazy watching that because it's so emotionally dissonant from what myself and probably every actor there is feeling.
One of the things I really liked was the way that they brought Michael B. Jordan back as Killmonger because he was such a great villain in Black Panther. Just watching that made me remember what an enigmatic and, like, compelling presence he was in that movie. But also, it worked really well for the story they were trying to tell, that Shuri was, like, channeling her grief through anger. And so, of course, that is the person that she would see in that moment. So I thought that was just, like, one of those instances where, you know, the constraints of the movie they had to make really worked with the movie that they also wanted to make.
And a place where maybe that was not so successful was the reintroduction of Lupita Nyong'o, because, like, I mean, I was so happy to have her back, but it's, like, so funny that it's just like, oh, Lupita, where have you been? In Haiti? And it's like, we all know that she, like, didn't do the Avengers movie because she wanted to be in an off-Broadway play and, like, hates this Avengers shit. And, like, Lupita, who's, like, one of the greatest actors of, like, our generation, like, she's phoning it in. Like, she does not give a shit about this movie.
I don't know, but I still think you don't really see that in her performance.
I think she's very committed. Maybe I'm projecting. I felt like her
You're projecting what you see in the real world.
Yeah, maybe.
And because I thought she was really dialed in. Like, that scene that she has with Okoye, where she's talking about why she wasn't at the funeral. Like, I mean, she's an incredible actress, and she has to do so little to convey so much.
Yeah, that's true. And she can do a lot with a little, as can, like, a lot of prestige actors in, like, these franchises. It is kind of wild, though, that, spoiler alert, like, in the post-credit scene, like, she's like, yeah, and Chadwick knocked me up and left me on this island, and, like, here's my son. I was like, what the fuck? Like, another young
Avenger?
Well,
that also reminded me just how long it's been since the first Black Panther came out in 2018. And I don't know when Wakanda Forever was originally supposed to be rolled out, like, because Wakanda Forever is the official end of Phase 4.
Oh.
Like, this is now the end of sort of the post-endgame fallout.
I didn't know that.
And now we're in Phase 5. As you can see with them laying things in the ground, like the Julia Louis-Dreyfus character, who that might have been my only, like, real complaint with this movie, is I just, every part with her and Martin Freeman, as much as I like Martin Freeman and as much as I love. Julia Louis-Dreyfus, really took me out of the movie.
Same.
And, like, I mean, she's so funny, but she felt so out of place. And even, like, the streak of gray in her hair, which I'm sure is, like, what she looks like in the comic books and is some sort of, like, nod to that stylistically, it just looked out of place in this world.
It doesn't work with her. No.
Also, this movie was very badly lit and was so dark, especially the underwater scenes.
Yeah, like, so dark.
I just, like, maybe they're going for some kind of realism, but this is a comic book movie, babe. Turn the lights
out. Yeah, realism, honey. Like, these are mermaids. You know what I mean?
These are mermaids.
Let it be said. Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, like, I'm never unhappy to watch Julia Louis-Dreyfus on screen. But yeah, when Marvel is marveling, like, just for the sake of, like, threading all of these movies together, it's like, those are things that we would cut out of if this was not a Marvel movie, if it was any other movie. Like, these would be chop, chop, chop.
I just wanted her to say, it's me, Valentina.
Wait, I have another spoilery question for you.
Uh-huh.
Spoiler. Did Angela Bassett have to die?
I do think so.
You do?
I do think she had to die. What I didn't like was that her death was given kind of the same weight as Namor's, like, random minion, like, being killed.
Yeah!
And it's like,
I think it was his
these two things
it was
are
his
not
wife
the same.
Or a sister or something. It was one of his relatives. But, like, he's a fish, so he has, like, 700 sisters. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, okay. This is, like, only kind of tangentially related to Black Panther, but I did come up with a sort of wild conspiracy theory. So, so I saw this movie with friend of the podcast, Ty Mitchell, and we were talking about how a year or two ago, there was so much conversation about Letitia Wright being an anti-vaxxer, and it was so loud, but it really kind of disappeared, especially in the lead up to this film. I feel like I did not see a lot of big stories about it.
No.
I know that very recently she has kind of come out and like disavowed it, and also disavowed a priest she was connected with who has a lot of like homophobic and transphobic views. Anyway, I'm just was so shocked that there wasn't a bigger like furor around especially the anti-vaxxer of it all. And I was also thinking about how that wasn't really a big part of the conversation when Death on the Nile came out at the beginning of this year, which she was also in. And then I started thinking, you know, Disney is really evil. And they knew that Shuri, you know, was going to be the lead in this movie and that they had to, you know, sort of protect their investment. And my conspiracy is that Disney is behind COVID-19. The outing of Armie Hammer as a cannibal. As a way to draw fire from Letitia during the Death on the Nile press tour to sort of set the stage for her to be able to get through that without any like journalists asking her questions during interviews, because all the heat was on Armie, so that by the time Black Panther came out, we had already kind of moved on from it. That's my like galaxy brain, but also brainworms conspiracy theory.
The versions can't see it, but my jaw is dropped. You need to put that on TikTok immediately. I mean, support this crazy.
There's no actual real logic involved in it. but at least what I think is some publicist at least brought it up as an option at some point.
Oh, for sure. I mean, the devil works hard, but Marvel PR works harder.
Well Disney
honey.
PR, because that's what it all goes back to. The House of Mouse, honey.
Yes, House of Mouse. I was going to remark on an often heard complaint on this podcast. Can we talk about the blink and you missed it gay kiss in this movie that I didn't even see?
I saw it. It was just like a head kiss.
A forehead kiss?
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
Lesbians really be kissing foreheads.
And also, like, for this movie, what a waste of Michaela Cole. Like, we could have had Michaela scenes instead of, like, these Martin Friedman scenes. And, like, I was just like, where was Michaela?
Yeah, but I do think at least there was enough of the things that I liked in the movie to make up for there not being enough of the things that I wanted more of.
I'm excited for what's next, though I will say I did not think that Angela Bassett needed to die. That was my primary complaint, and that's just because selfishly I want to see her in every movie. And
but she got so much to do before she died. Like, I was so happy that we had so much time for her in this film. She got some action scenes. She got a lot of great, you know, monologuing in. People are like, she's going to get an Oscar nomination, which is like, girl, that's not happening. But
I mean, but not to be a bitch, though, but like, there are so many other characters to kill that aren't Angela Bassett.
But they wouldn't. But it wouldn't have been narratively satisfying. You have to think about the story you're telling.
I disagree. I think like Okoye, if they had killed Okoye, there are a few people where I was like,
No. Shuri had to be at her lowest. She had to be fat, nasty, and broke. She had to come on this bitch mad as hell.
I loved the lesson at the end. I wish that we could have seen Shuri be a little evil. Like, obviously she was really dark the whole film. I wanted her to make a crucially dark mistake in killing someone. I guess, like, was Namor's like little, was Namor's
like, it was
like
kind of her fault.
It was more
Lupita's fault because she came to rescue Shuri. Would have liked to see just more of Shuri as the Black Panther, because it's like she was doing lines of the heart-shaped herb or, you know, whatever the fuck. She microdosed. And then she like immediately not only has the powers, but kind of the skill to use them. And like, I get that this movie couldn't be another origin story, but I just would have liked more time with her being super powered and not kind of all of her like stepping into that mantle happening very quickly or kind of off screen, but the fight sequences and like action were fun and like didn't get in the way of still telling a very emotional story.
Yeah, I totally agree. Speaking of emotional stories, did you try to get Taylor Swift tickets this weekend?
I did not try to get Taylor Swift tickets because I just, well, you know, like I don't super care about seeing live music. And also just like didn't want to deal with what I knew was going to be the nightmare of, you know, getting tickets for that show. Never could I even have imagined the true nightmare it would become, though.
Oh, my God. I mean, the versions can read up on, like, all the drama that went down about how, like, people basically, like, couldn't get tickets and Ticketmaster had to cancel its actual on-sale date because of lack of quantity. But, like, I wanted to bring it up because we have a lot of Swifties on the pod, on the pod who are listening, and I feel like pressure needs to be applied because Taylor Swift's statement on this was so nothing. It was so
absolutely
useless.
Nothing. She put nothing. All the blame on Ticketmaster and was like,
yes.
Oh my God, it sucks that you couldn't get tickets for the concert.
Yeah, and like obviously she can do her part and like add shows, but like it's not even like I want her to take blame. It's that she is the most powerful artist on the planet, so to some degree. When Taylor Swift expressed her very first political opinion about that fucking, you know, governor in Tennessee, or I don't even remember whatever the fuck.
Representative.
Yeah, representative, thank you. More people registered to vote in a single day than in any other day in the history of this country. Like, that is obscene. She can move bodies to create actual, tangible change in a way that could fundamentally change things for all of these other artists in the industry. And it makes me angry that her kind of very tepid response to Ticketmaster was ultimately a display of her allegiance to Capitol and her relationship with Ticketmaster. If she was on her shit, she would say, hey, this is fucked. Ticketmaster and Live Nation never should have merged. This is an illegal monopoly that has now created problems for artists, independent artists across the board, and now my fans. So this is personal to me. Break Ticketmaster up and change this fucking shit. Like, Taylor is, if any artist could do that and actually have an impact, it would be Taylor.
Well, you know? Now the Justice Department is investigating Ticketmaster. And yes, of course, we wish that Taylor would have gotten involved herself, but like, I just am not going to expect that of celebrities who want to make as much money as possible. And, like, there are no perfect celebrities. Like, I certainly don't think Taylor is a perfect celebrity, and nor do I expect her to be one. I kind of, like her music and keep it pushing from there. But Swifties are powerful, and because of them, this could change. And I saw something that was like, Swifties, can you tackle racism and abortion next?
No, actually, Swifties are smart and are great organizers, and like, come on, let's fucking change something. I heard that you finally dove into Miss Imelda Staunton.
Yeah, I started season 5 of The Crown. I'm only an episode in. But I am seeing kind of right off the bat a lot of what I've seen people talking about how it's gotten very soapy in a way that it never was before. But I have to say, I do want Elizabeth Debicki to step on me. Imelda Staunton is incredible, as always. Yeah. I was so happy to see, what's her face? Mrs. Harris Goes to Paris as Princess Margaret.
That's Mrs. Harris Goes to Paris?
Yeah, what's her name? Oh, Leslie Manville as Princess Margaret, who, I just, you know, I loved that the season started with, you know, Claire Foy coming back to do young Queen Elizabeth, as she always does. But it just made me remember how incredible those first seasons of The Crown were. And listen, I love The Crown. I will keep watching it until it ends. But those first seasons, you know, Claire Foy put her whole pussy into that role. Vanessa Kirby as Princess Margaret was so incredible. I love Vanessa Kirby. I wish she wasn't just relegated to like those weird like Fast and the Furious spinoff movies. Although I am always happy to see her in the Mission Impossible movies.
I didn't even know she was in either of those, but I didn't really know who she was. Yeah. But like, she's so good in the series.
Yeah, she's, that's my, I mean, of course, I also love Helena Bonham Carter. But yeah, that's my so Princess Margaret. Yeah, I'm, you know, I'm enjoying it. And it just, I like held off on it for so long because I was like, oh, I'm not in the right headspace. Like, it's so serious. It's so dramatic. And then as soon as I started watching it, I was like, I want to sit here for the next 10 hours and just watch this show.
Yeah. I do wish, like, it's this season in particular is like not as like fun, like, for lack of a better word right now, as like previous seasons. Like, there's less like kind of, sometimes like I enjoy the hijinks of the royal family, and this one deals with a lot of like heavy subject matter. But yeah, I mean, Elizabeth Debicki is like eyeliner alone. Like, they knew what they were doing with that eyeliner. Like, come on.
I'm also so happy that they, I mean, Netflix even tweeted something about this, that the Crown let Elizabeth Debicki be tall. And I do appreciate, that they don't have everyone around her like standing on, you know, like blocks and like with lifts in their shoes, and that she just is taller than everyone.
If they had CGI'd everyone taller, like Tom Lord Cruise. Of the Rings Fellowship, oh, yeah. Like, no, like Gandalf and the Hobbits, yeah. Like style. Oh my God.
Elizabeth Debicki should play Gandalf.
What if they actually like reconstructed the entirety of the Crown set to appear physically bigger so that Elizabeth Debicki would appear physically smaller?
I love that. That's so Elizabeth Debicki should be in season 2 of Rings of Power, if that happens.
Don't even with me. That, like, literally anyone, like, that I recognize in Rings of Power would be great, but Elizabeth Debicki in Rings of Power, damn.
Elizabeth Debicki should be in House of the Dragon. She should be a Targaryen.
Yeah, that's actually much more worthy for her chops.
I still have not finished Rings of Power. I don't know if I ever will.
You know what? Actually, like, holidays are perfect time to finish it. Like, no, your but mind's holidays, gonna be off.
Holidays are when I'm gonna do my annual Lord of the Rings rewatch, and yes, kind of, and honestly, kind of the last thing I'm gonna want to do after that is watch Rings of Power.
That's kind of tea. You could like put it on background while you're like, you know, making a pie or something.
I don't make pies. I eat them.
I was.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeartRadio app.
Fodor's Guide to Espionage, a 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor, as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner.
Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So, The Chronicles of Narnia is a fantasy series written by C.S. Lewis. Heard of it?
Heard of it. Yes. It was one of the few things I was allowed to consume growing up. What about
because
you?
It's super Christian.
Because it's extremely, extremely Christian. I would wager to say that it is uncreatively Christian. Like, C.S. Lewis was lifting plot points from the Bible and just putting them on the page.
Yeah, he plagiarized the God.
God herself.
Yes, I also read the books as a kid. I think, though, that my intro to the world of Narnia was specifically the 1979 animated movie.
Mm, mine as well.
I think I've talked about this before, that when I was a kid growing up, my dad was a librarian at a middle school. Mm. And I definitely remember him bringing home the VHS of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, the animated movie, so I could watch it. And I think I, like, stole it, so he never brought it back.
Love. Wow, love. Wait, don't
I was
you,
such
did
a
you
little
ever get
klepto.
You never got fined for that?
No, he was the librarian. What was he going to do? arrest
call
me?
Wow.
I got away with it.
That movie is stunning.
It's
the
stunning.
Animation's the animation's so beautiful.
The White Witch in that movie is so fierce.
The diva.
The diva doll herself.
Oh, God. Her, she has, like, this beautiful fur coat and, like, a skull cap kind of vibe.
Yes, with a crown on top of the skull cap.
Yes, iconic.
She has a huge knife.
Yeah, and very, like, Grinch-like fluctuant facial expressions. Like, sometimes she's soft and supple and queen-like, and other times she looks like a demon.
Well,
like,
I think also part of that is that the animation is not great.
Well, it's not great because it's from 1979, but it's actually really beautiful in how old it is, I feel.
There was some very good animation made long before 1979. Have you ever heard of Walt Disney Studios?
Okay. No, I'm realizing that you're talking about the kind of frames, the images per frame.
Yeah, it's a little...
Yes, it's choppy.
It's very choppy.
Yes, but it's beautiful.
It is beautiful, and I love that version of it. And so from there, I went and read the book series, The Chronicles of Narnia. So for virgins out there, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe is technically the second book in the series, The Chronicles of Narnia.
The only book most people recognize.
But it was the first one that was released and that in 1950 by C.S. Lewis, and then he went back and wrote the first book, The Magician's Nephew, and then all of the sequels that come after The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. There are seven books in total.
Yeah.
Have you read all of them?
No, I have read, I think, three of them and retained
none of them, I feel. Like, I definitely, I might have reread Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe because as a kid, we used to listen to, like, the audiobook and stuff. Like,
the audiobooks of them are so good.
Yeah, but, like, we, because my family, like, this is the kind of fantasy or mainstream culture that we could, like, indulge in because it was so Christian. Like, so, so Christian.
Which I did not get at first. I thought it was just fantastical. And that's why it's a great gateway drug to Christianity, I suppose.
It really is. And I, let me tell you, had the reverse experience, of course. Like, for me, Narnia and Christianity were inextricable. There was no way I could consume Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe without thinking about God.
Wow. I didn't get any of the Jesus stuff, even though it's so obvious.
Yes,
and
okay.
When you go back and look at it all, I mean, you know, so I did read all the books at one point. The only ones that have really stuck with me are obviously The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, because it is the best. Mm. I also love The Magician's Nephew because it gives you the origin story of both Narnia and of the White Witch, Jadis.
Do you remember any of it? Like, I unfortunately don't remember any of the plot.
So, like, so the plot of The Magician's Nephew is there's this boy whose uncle is a magician. It's called The Magician's Nephew. And he and his friend Poppy, I believe, find their way into this place called the Wood Between the Worlds, which is the way you get into all these different universes. Mm. And they find their way into this world called Charn, which is the home world of Jadis, who becomes the White Witch. Mm. And the story with her is that she and her sister were in this, like, fierce battle for the crown. Mm. But they said they were not going to use magic to get the crown. But then Jadis' sister did, and they were like they were kind of like about to destroy each other, and Jadis had this little secret gag up her sleeve, which was called the deplorable word. Mm. And what the deplorable word would do
already sounds Christian. Continue.
It would destroy everyone in the entire world except her.
Oh my God!
And so at the last moment, she used it. Everyone in the world is destroyed, so by default, she becomes queen, but she's, like, queen of nothing. So what she decides to do is use magic to preserve herself until someone comes along and rings a bell and unleashes her. And so, obviously, the first thing these kids do when they go to her world is ring a bell, and she comes back to life, and then she kind of hitches a ride with them back to the Wood Between the Worlds, where, like, her powers don't really work there, and she gets kind of sick, and then they take her to Earth. She kind of tries to take over Earth.
Oh, my God.
But it doesn't really work out. And then finally, they're able to get her back into the Wood Between the Worlds. Before that, she, like, breaks off a lamppost in London. And then she takes that lamppost. They all make their way into Narnia as Narnia is being created by Aslan. And the witch tries to throw the lamppost at Aslan, and it plants in the ground and grows into the lamppost from The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
Oh my God. I mean, that's such a gag. Now that makes me actually want to revisit the first one.
It's so good. And that's, you know, so that quote that that is a meme, like, do not cite the deep magic to me, which I was there when it was written, is referencing the fact that both the White Witch and Aslan were there when Narnia was created. And so that's why they both know, like, the rules of the universe. And also that's where you see even more of the biblical stuff coming in, because Jadis eats an apple from a tree that gives her everlasting life.
Of course, of course.
She tries to talk the titular magician's nephew into eating the apple, but he doesn't do it. And that, the magician's nephew is the boy who grows up to be the old man who owns the house with the wardrobe in it.
Oh.
It's all connected.
Oh, now I understand. Okay, I'm actually so delighted that you summarized that for me, because I truly retained nothing. And also,
I'm such a nerd that I know all of that.
You really are. I'm not going to lie. But it's also impressive that you're able to retain so much about, like, huge worlds that were written eons ago, but nothing about like what we recorded 1 hour ago.
Well, one thing is important and one thing isn't.
A lot that was in conversation around C.S. Lewis when we were reading the books as kids, or like when I was consuming this shit, was like the relationship between him and Tolkien, which I feel like we talked about a little bit.
Do you think they were fucking and sucking?
No, I think, well, I mean,
they were.
Obviously, because
I'm going to go on AO3 and see if there's any fan fiction about them.
Obviously, because this is like a virgin, of course we think that they're sucking and fucking. But if in my heart of hearts, I actually think they were so, so repressed. And I feel like the vibe between them, I've read a lot about their relationship, and the vibe kind of was like, C.S. Lewis, like, takes a lot of credit for helping, like, be the what they call the midwife for Tolkien's worlds. Like, they say that, like, Tolkien never would have finished his work if, like, C.S. Lewis didn't bring him home or, like, encourage him all along the way. But I was also like, girl, your work suffered because of it. Because, like, no offense, like, love Chronicles of Narnia, but, like, the Chronicles of Narnia compared to Tolkien Rose, like, nothing. Like, C.S. Lewis is out here being like, this lion talks, and like, this lion is also Jesus Christ. You get it? And Tolkien is like, how many languages have you written?
Yeah, but one is for children and one is not.
Okay. I mean, there's violence in these books too. It's like some of the you know, it's not 100% for children 100%
no,
of the time,
but they are children's, but they are books, children's sure. stories. And although, you know, Tolkien also wrote The Hobbit as a book for children, but then as his children grew up, you know, he wanted to advance the idea of the quote-unquote fairy story into something that could be consumed by adults,
right,
because that wasn't really something that existed at that time.
Right.
And, you know, they are so obviously contemporaries, and, you know, their works, I think when we think about the legacy of fantasy, are the ones that are the most in conversation with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And they definitely sucked each other off.
Yeah, I mean, they were working on these, like, literal fan fictions. Like, working on their own little fan fictions, like, in, like, a fucking gay bar together. I mean, it wasn't a gay bar, but it was called The Eagle and the Child, which is a very, like, it's gay. I didn't get too deep into this, but apparently they had a falling out.
They were, because they broke up!
Yes! They had
you heard it here first. J.R.R. Tolkien and C.S. Lewis were boyfriends, had a breakup.
Yes.
And the rest is her story.
But according to Tolkien, like, their relationship only lasted, I think, like, 12 years or so. And then after that, they had a very fierce, like, falling out, I think, because
a breakup.
C.S. Lewis apparently took a job at... Okay, wait.
Took a lover.
Yes, Lewis left Oxford and took a job as the chair of medieval and Renaissance literature, nerd, at Cambridge. Mm. And I think that they personally... So they had fundamental, like, differing beliefs about, like, what should be taught in the canon. And I believe Lewis was the one that's like, we should be teaching things that are, like, a little more... Not contemporary, because neither of them believed in contemporary literature. But I think that, like, Tolkien was, like, nothing outside of the Canterbury Tales is, like, relevant. Like, it is only Middle English.
It's kind of spelled.
No, Middle English is so fucking boring and not relevant at all to, like, today's society. And I actually think it should be completely expunged from literary canons of today. I think that we as a society should decimate anything in Middle English, and it's not relevant.
Where is the sad gay period drama about Tolkien and Lewis's love affair?
It's probably on AO3.
I'm going to write it, and it will be made into a My Policeman style film.
Yeah, I wonder.
Or maybe like a BBC miniseries.
Okay, so if you think they broke up, what is the true story of their breakup? If this is the Wikipedia version, what's the true story?
Okay.
That they were both tops?
No,
they were both bottoms.
No, I don't believe in those binaries. I think that Tolkien was into some, like, real gross orc shit. And Lewis was very kind of pure.
Yeah, like, wanted to commit to the bit, but couldn't really, you know.
Also, Tolkien had children. So maybe he wanted, you know, he wanted to live in the straight world.
C.S. Lewis was just his childless fag friend.
And C.S. Lewis, you know, I don't know, actually, if C.S. Lewis had children, I would imagine he did.
It seems like he would. It seems like a thing he would do.
I'm just going to say, they just had some, like, drama queen breakup. They loved each other, but it didn't work out. And who knows, maybe if it weren't for, you know, the society that... you know, wouldn't let them be together, maybe they would have.
Yeah. Or maybe they were just petty and jealous of each other's work, which is, like, what I think happened. I think they were both jealous of each other's work. Because, like, if Tolkien credited Lewis to helping him create this, like, big thing, like, would that not create a strain on their relationship? Like, if someone was helping you through years and years and years, like, birth this, like, massive franchise-level epic...
Sure.
Like, of course they would grow to hate each other.
But you know what? At the end of the day, they were both white men who are dead and...
bald.
And bald. Wig snatched. And let's talk
dead
about
and bald.
Let's talk about the divas they created.
Yeah.
So we talked a little bit about the White Witch. Okay, there's also Aslan, who is, you know, the Jesus figure.
Talk about a stunt queen.
I definitely wanted to fuck Aslan.
In
pretty much every version of... The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe that's been made.
Aslan's objectively hot. But, like, played by Liam Neeson, a little on the nose. Like, they knew how hot Aslan was.
And Aslan
like,
is giving Mufasa. Give him,
yeah, the sick, yes, that is what's happening.
Let's see if there's Aslan Mufasa porn.
No. Gay yep. XXX?
Yep.
What is it?
Oh,
no.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
You texted
to me. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I've gone too far.
If you are scandalized, then I feel
anyway,
like
okay.
that's saying something.
Aslan's very hot. Also, okay, so let's talk about the movie. Franchise.
Mm-hmm.
So the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe film series, the saga, the franchise, came out in 2005. I think that's probably how most people of our generation and younger were introduced to it. This was sort of like post Harry Potter, post Lord of the Rings. I think studios realizing that there was a thirst for, you know, fantasy IP.
Right.
And I love the 2005 film. I think it's so good. It gave the world several people. It gave us James McAvoy. This was his breakout.
What?
Yeah.
This was his breakout?
Yeah, girl. What else did you think it was?
I'm freaking out. I thought he was an established actor by this
time. No, this was his big break.
That's crazy.
It was also Tilda Swinton's big break.
That's also crazy. I did not know that either. That's crazy to me. Wow. And
Tilda
they were both
Swinton,
so good.
Tilda Swinton with dreadlocks.
I mean, but can we just talk about the production design in general? I rewatched this movie for the record, so it's fresh on my mind. Stunning.
It's like, a beautiful film.
I remembered it being kind of generic. And when I watched it, I was like, every single frame is actually like better than most of what I watched in Rings of Power.
Oh my God. The moment where Lucy pulls the sheet off the wardrobe.
I have goosebumps.
Chills.
I mean, honestly, everything the queen wears is so stunning, aside from the dreads. But, like, the fact that her icicle crown gets slowly smaller as the world melts.
Well, I
like,
do kind of
the
get...
The fur gag, like...
I do get sad when the winter goes away, because I think that's the cuntiest part of the movie.
It's really cunty. And it's also what you remember when you think of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
Yes.
Which is why it's canonically a Christmas film.
It is. Well, I mean, Santa is literally a character. Character in the movie.
Which is so, once again, loser behavior from C.S. Lewis, I think. Like, writing Santa into your story, bro, and Tolkien is over here creating, like, worlds of, like, orcs and elves and all their languages. Like, you wrote Santa.
But I do also think that Santa in the movie is hot.
Of course you do.
He's a daddy.
I was waiting for you to say it.
He's a daddy.
Yeah.
This is Neil Strauss,
host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeartRadio app. Fodor's Guide to Espionage, a 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor, as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken, Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two, Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner. Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Watching a lot of, like, fantasy stuff that we watch today, whether it's, like, Marvel or, like, any sort of, like, you know, original, they make a live-action Snow White movie or all these other things they're trying to, like, make from original IP, it's, like, it feels regurgitated a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Or it feels like a rush job. And there's something about this that just feels so – it felt so fresh. And I think that it's –
well, it's also all practical. Like, now we live in the era of everything is CGI. And this is – it's all, even if it's all on sound stages, which I'm sure it all is, like – outside of Aslan and some of the and the other like talking animal characters, this is a world that feels tangible.
Well, actually, the war is all CGI. In at the end of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, and I actually think it's kind of fine because they gave us everything else. You know what I mean? Like, and I think a lot of that, you know, a lot of like what I just honestly was watching this and I was like, if you told, I mean, the CGI is like a little, but like if you had told me it came out 2 years ago, I would believe you. Like, but that's how stunning it was.
That moment when all the Pevensies walk through the wardrobe for the first time into Narnia.
Goosebumps.
Into the snow. Like, that captures something about childhood mm-hmm. and the ability for regular things to become extraordinary. Like, in a way that is so profound.
And you could tell that the person, I don't even know who made this movie, but, like, you could tell that there was a love for the story. And I also felt like whoever made this movie had a love for the animated movie. There's a lot of things that imagistically replicate what the 1979, just little hints here and there, like what the 1979 movie did. And I loved that because it was still reinterpreted, right?
Yeah, well, probably all the different adaptations are somewhat in conversation with each other.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen the BBC miniseries?
No.
It's from the late 80s.
Does it do all of the books?
Yeah, all of them.
Did you?
Yeah, I watched them. I definitely watched The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe more than any of the other ones. Mm. But I have seen all of them. They're not my favorites.
Mm.
So of the film adaptations that started in 2005, there were two sequels, Prince Caspian and The Voyage of the Dawn Treader.
Which were flops, I feel.
Which were kind of flops, although they did introduce Ben Barnes to the world. That was his... He was in that Netflix show, Shadow and Bone. He has been in a lot of stuff. He's like a hunky British guy. He also is a very popular fan cast for a young Sirius Black. And I think he's super sexy. There were plans for a fourth movie, The Silver Chair, which is, I think, one of the better books. And it also, well, something the movies did was Tilda Swinton appeared in all of the sequels, even though...
Right,
though after The White Witch is killed, like, they make allusions to her, and...
They knew how much she carried first one.
Even in... I don't remember if it's in Prince Caspian or Voyage of the Dawn Treader, but in one of them, they attempt to resurrect her, and so she comes back. And that is in the book, but it's like they talk about it. They don't actually do it. But, like, if you got Tilda, you're going to use Tilda.
Yeah, which is kind of like, I mean, I'm sure they just wanted to, like, get these kids in movies as fast as they could before they, like, went fully through puberty, even though they kind of did. But, like, they really should have just gone straight to Magician's Nephew, because that, to me, is second best story.
I know. I wish there was a Magician's Nephew movie so badly.
We should do it. We should do it.
It was announced a couple years ago that Netflix had bought the rights to Narnia, and they were going to make either a series or films.
I would love a series.
It's still in development. There hasn't been really any news on it. I think maybe, like, COVID slowed down the plans, but hopefully it happens one day. I would love to see it.
I wonder how Narnia, I mean, like, 2005 wasn't that long ago, but culturally, it's kind of eons ago. And I wonder how receptive the world might be now to something that is so explicitly Christian. Like,
well, it's so pure. And
yeah,
and
it's so pure.
And the thing about all fantasy media now is that it has to have a level of meta-ness to it.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be commenting on what fantasy is in the modern era. And that's why, you know, we have something like The Magicians, which is a book series by Lev Grossman that was turned into a TV series on Sci-Fi that is very, and I'm not using this word negatively, derivative of Chronicles of Narnia, because it's a book that sort of remixes Narnia and Harry Potter in this way.
Yeah, it's a little Harry Potter too.
So if you have never read the books or watched the TV show, it's about this guy, Quentin, who's, like, very depressed and gets into a magical college in the books and then grad school in the TV show. And he also had a childhood obsession with a series of novels that are a stand-in for Narnia, but the world is called Fillory in The Magicians.
Mm-hmm.
And after he goes to magic school, he discovers that Fillory is actually a real place, and he and his friends go there. And it's so meta, like, to a crazy extent. And it's basically, like, the whole idea of the series is, what if you were, like, super obsessed with fantasy, and that thing that people are obsessed with fantasy, that idea you have that, like, oh, one day I'll, like, walk into a wardrobe and it will take me into Narnia. Like, what if that actually happened? And would that actually make you any happier than you were before? Or would you still just, like, be depressed, but you would be in a magical world?
Those are the themes that I, like, want to see if it's ever made into – if, like, Narnia is ever made into a series, right? It feels like The Magicians was – kind of like the adultification of some of these, like, tropes and themes, because I think, you know, the stories are actually, like, they have violence in them, like, or at least the ones that I read, like, had violence in them or, like, adult themes or whatever. But there's room for it to go all the way if it wanted to, but it, you know, I'm sure they would never, because they would, if Netflix or whoever ever made this again, they'd probably want to prioritize, like, a family Christmas movie.
Well, you know? Also, I'm sure that whoever controls the rights to the books, like, I'm sure there's, like, a C.S. Lewis Foundation.
Yeah. Morality clause.
They probably have very strict guidelines in place about how these novels can be adapted.
Wait, we should talk about that, because I feel like the morality, this is something that we spoke about when we were talking through our, like, Rings of Power recaps, that, you know, the morality and the kind of good versus bad thing that exists in Lord of the Rings is, like, cranked up to the nth degree in the world of Narnia. Like,
almost all of
the conflict.
To a problematic level. Like, something that some people talk about is Susan, who's one of the Pevensey children. I don't know if you've ever heard of this, but there's a short story that Neil Gaiman wrote called The Problem of Susan. Because, so the ending of the books is really fucked up. I don't know if you know how the books
remember.
End. So in the last book, you find out that all the Pevensey children died in a train accident, and they all go to basically, like, heaven in Narnia. And it's supposed to be, like, a good thing that they're all dead, but they're together in heaven. Except Susan doesn't get to go. And the reasoning that Aslan gives them is because she had become obsessed with, like, makeup and boys and stuff, and had become, like, super jaded. And so she didn't get to go to heaven with her dead family.
My God, now I need to read.
You have to. So this, in this short story, it's about a student who's interviewing a professor of, like, children's literature, and the professor actually is Susan all grown up. And there's, like, some really great scenes of, you know, there's, like, this part where she talks about Aslan fucking the White Witch. And
no!
It's just, like, it's super fucked up.
And Wait, that sounds so good.
It's just, like, really great commentary on, you know, the, like, very kind of fucked up morality of C.S. Lewis and the way that he did not treat especially the female characters well. You know, they were either very pure children or evil witches. And there kind of was no in-between for women. Kind of the same way that for Tolkien, you know, it was either, like, Galadriel or nothing.
And it must be said that they had this, C.S. Lewis and Tolkien had, like, a writing group called, like, the Inklings or something faggy like that. And they would not allow women in this writer's group.
Yeah, because they were all fucking and sucking.
Yeah, I mean, it was also, like, I think that, like, Oxford didn't, like, allow, like, a woman to, like, study there until, like, 1920 or something like that. But, like, it's still just, like, it's stupid. It's so clear what their worlds were. I'm actually shook that there are even, like, women characters in, like, Narnia. But, like, I want to talk about the morality, like, a little bit more, because Aslan as Jesus is so ham-fisted. And I think it's really interesting that Aslan is kind of, like, one of those characters, one of those, like, all-seeing, all-powerful characters that has tons of information that would be helpful to the rest of the characters, but withholds it for no reason, like a Dumbledore or a Gandalf or a, you know, but like no one, it's never explained why Aslan disappeared for ages and let like Narnia become always winter, never Christmas. You know what I mean? I'm sure that's explained like in the actual mythology of it, but like, it's so funny. It's like, and also like when Aslan sacrifices, well, when he's crucified, like literally crucified like Jesus, like he never explains to anyone why it's happening.
I mean, he doesn't explain it only after it's happening.
No, yeah. He explains it all after. It's like at any point he could tell anybody in this story, like, hey, don't worry, I'm going to die, but I'm going to come back in like 24 hours. Like, it's chill. But like the crucifixion scene, like we have to say it, like crucifixion's hot.
Well, he doesn't get crucified. He gets stabbed on the stone table.
Yes, but he's crucified. He's crucified, period. Like, that's crucifixion. Crucifixion is, like, a communal killing of someone on the basis of, like, sin penance.
Oh, does it not have to actually be on a cross?
No, I mean, like, it's it is, yeah, on a cross, but it is a crucifix. Like, it's a crucifixion. Like, it's literally nothing else. Like,
it's a ritual sacrifice.
Yes, but instead of a cross, it's a stone table, which is, again, another ham-fisted metaphor for, like, whatever the cross was. But, like, I love that they shaved him. They shaved Aslan. Mm. Again.
They gave him a makeover before they killed him.
Yeah.
And then in the movie, the White Witch like wears his fur as part of her look when she charges into battle at the end, which
I
is
forgot about
so
that.
Petty it's, and also fierce.
It's a serve. It's
she
a
was
serve
like, "Hey,
half.
You goblin over here, take this hair and make me something to wear tomorrow."
Yeah. Oh my God, that's such. I didn't even realize that when it happened on screen. Okay, it was such a serve.
Did you know that not only are there film adaptations and TV adaptations? There's also a musical adaptation of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
Ooh.
And
it's bad.
Do you want to know who might have appeared in a production of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, the musical?
Oh,
when
wow.
they were in medical school? Medical school. When they were in middle school?
Oh, my God. You.
Yes. Do you want to know what role I played?
Have I heard this before? Were you the narrator?
No. I was the professor.
Oh.
Who owns the house.
No, that's a shit roll.
But
sorry.
It is a shit roll. And you know what made it worse is that so the way that the show is written is that the professor and Aslan are supposed to be played by the same actor, but they only cast me as the professor and not
so
as
shady.
Aslan.
Shady
but
boots.
I had this song. I think it's maybe like the second song in the show, and it's called Doors and Windows.
Oh my God.
And I do still remember it.
No! We'll sing it now.
Doors and windows open and close. To hide or expose wonders waiting for you.
Ooh.
That's just a little tease.
Intrigue. Was it good? Was the musical good?
No. No, it wasn't.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeartRadio app.
Fodor's Guide to Espionage, a 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor, as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner.
Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how, I don't know where, I don't know what. God, if you show me, God, if you tell me, God, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout. And woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Edmund is such a little shit. Like,
I mean, just the name Edmund.
Yeah. I mean, yet another nerd. Much like Susan, yet another kid that is like literally a child making a child's mistake. And like,
yeah, but he like sells his whole family out. Little Judas.
Yes, he is definitely the Judas archetype.
For candy.
For candy.
Have you ever had Turkish delight?
Yes, absolutely.
It's not that good.
No. When it's good, Diva.
It's like gelatin covered in powdered sugar.
Honey,
that's literally all Turkish delight is.
Honey, yes, that's true. But the thing is, it's about the flavoring. It's about the consistency. It's about how much gelatin you use, right? Because if you use too much gelatin, it gets really chewy, really gummy, really nasty. But if you do it really light, it's soft. It melts in your mouth. If you're using like the right ingredients and the right execution, let me tell you, we need to go get some good Turkish delight.
I remember that when we did that production of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, at rehearsal one day, someone's mom brought us Turkish delight to eat, and we were all expecting some kind of like, we were expecting to have our minds blown. We were expecting to have our pussies rocked.
And it tastes and like then, ass.
And then someone opens this tin of like powdered gelatin, and we're like, the fuck?
It's an extremely British delicacy. Like, Brits love like the taste of like some sort of like gummy thing that is flavored like perfume. Like, rose Turkish delight is disgusting.
Well, like, that sounds kind of good, actually.
Ew, I hate the taste of rose, especially in gelatin. But Turkish delight comes in so many different flavors. I don't fuck with Turkish delight that has nuts in it or like pistachios. That's not like, I don't like nuts and gelatin combined. But in the Borough Market in London town, ever heard of it? They, you know, there are, I don't know if it's like this anymore, but when I, you know, was there, there were like huge like lanes and swaths that were just Turkish delight. Like so many different varietals.
Turkish delight. I do love the way that she takes out her little potion and drops it onto the snow, and then the Turkish delight just appears.
Stunning. Stunning. Tilda.
Stunning.
Stunning. This is Tilda's best work. No, that's not true.
No.
This is a role that, so actually, but, I was about to say this is a role that only Tilda could do, but it's actually not true. A lot of actresses.
No, I actually think it's specific to Tilda.
No, I don't think that's, I don't think that
who
she.
Who would you cast instead?
Literally any fierce white woman to play the White Witch.
No, but I think Tilda has this like alien, sure. This alien quality to her. Mm-hmm. But also a lot of those women have played witches who are kind of derivative of the White Witch, like Charlize Theron.
I was just about to say Charlize.
In Snow White and the Huntsman. Like Julianne Moore, there was some like weird fantasy movie that she played a witch in.
Yeah, in Snow White as well. Another Snow White movie. Angelina Jolie as Maleficent. Like,
but Tilda's so good as a witch. I mean, if you you know that Suspiria 2018 is one of my favorite films, and she plays a witch in that.
I just think when I rewatched it, she's fierce, she's amazing, she's sublime, she does have that alien quality. But at the end of the day, I think it's a role that's easy to make fierce. Like, I and the production design does so much, not to degrade her work, but it does so much work in addition to what she's doing.
I don't know. I think she elevates the movie. And, like, yes, I can.
It is elevated.
Yes, that's true. I can look back and say that some of that is my bias of just knowing who Tilda is, because I, you know, didn't obviously when I saw this for the first time. But I do think she has this quality to her where she can do so much with just one look. There's this one moment where after she's been plotting with Edmund and she sends him on his way to go like lure his family back to Narnia, she does this thing where she looks at him, she goes, "Oh, I'm going to miss you so much." And it's just like, it's so good.
I forgot
about
that.
And she has lots of little lines like that. Like when she sends her wolf to go find the Pevensies, she goes, "You know what to do.
You know what to do."
It's she eats every single second of that.
And the fight scene, Steva. She.
With her sword?
Ah, double swords. It's so fucking fierce.
On a sleigh being driven by polar bears?
I don't know why. I'm like shitting on Rings of Power so much, but literally, like, her with two swords is cooler than anything that happened the entirety of, like, Rings of Power.
You can't compete where you can't compare.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Like, I'm just, it made me, I was watching it and I turned it on to be a background watch. Like, I thought I was gonna look at my phone or, like, clean the house or something, and I sat down. Because I was like, damn, I forgot how good this movie is.
You know who I would love to see as the White Witch if a new adaptation does end up happening?
Yeah.
I think Michelle Yeoh as the White Witch would be incredible. I want to see her play a villain. Okay, something that's like not really talked about is the fact that Mr. Tumnus is like pretty rapey.
In that he is a full-grown satyr who has brought this child into his home multiple times.
And then, lulls her to sleep.
Essentially,
it's like
almost
a magical date rape.
But the only thing, so I guess what happens in that scene is he kind of thinks he's going to give her over to the witch and then has a kind of change of heart.
Yes.
And decides that
he realizes he can't do it.
He can't do it.
He gets turned to stone.
And that's why he gets turned to stone. Which, like, would you...
The witch gagged the girls.
Would you have turned her in?
Yeah, for sure.
Because the White Witch is kind of like fear. Like, I would have been on her side.
Totally.
I would have been Team Aslan.
I would have been her.
I would have been... Yeah. I would have been Team Aslan. But if Aslan's been gone for years... That sucks. Like, also, for your leader to desert you, like, God.
For sure.
And he's God. God has deserted you and then comes back and is like, hey, I'm in charge again. By the way, Edmund, you are going to be crucified. JK, I'm going to crucify myself and take all the credit, like, all the glory for that.
For sure. And the witch's crew, I have to say, is so much cooler than the good side.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when they sacrifice Aslan and they show up and all those, like, goblins and ghouls
fierce.
And stuff. For like partying, I've been to parties that looked pretty much exactly like that.
Oh yeah, Veil of Kashmir. Yeah, that was Spectrum.
Totally.
Yeah,
it was giving Berlin.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know the like, you know, I like the centaurs and stuff. Like they're kind of hot. Yeah. Would you fuck a centaur? or get fucked by a centaur.
Well, if you're getting fucked by a centaur, that's like, that's some permanent damage.
Yeah, it's a lot of dick.
We talked about this in our porn episode, but like the idea of wrecking my whole, as I don't want to yuck anybody's yum, not my tea. I don't want to permanently alter my whole. And I think that with a centaur, that is the case, Steve.
Let me look up some centaur porn.
Well, have you ever watched that video?
The guy getting fucked by the horse to death. To death.
Oh, yeah, he died.
He died.
Oh, God.
Oh, wow. Oh, my God. Look at that.
I forgot that he died. That's so sad. He died following his king.
He died doing what he loved. Getting fucked to death by a horse. What a way to go.
Let me answer your question. Actually, realistically, no. In my fantasy world, getting fucked by a centaur is extremely hot. Humanoids, very hot to me. Centaurs and satyrs, extremely hot to me. Giant horse cock, yeah, kind of hot to me.
So which magical creature are you most interested in having sex with?
I think it would be a centaur. If not an elf, but I feel like that's kind of cheating. But yeah, I think it would kind of be a centaur.
Elves are kind of just humans.
I think there's something really erotic about horses. This is why I was obsessed with Equus as a kid.
I'm a horse girl.
Not as a kid, as a college student. But did you know that I took this is actually
a horse cock?
Shut up. This is a gag actually. I don't know if I've ever told you this. When I was in college, I enrolled and took a full course on horses throughout literature. And I wrote.
Oh my God.
My term. Yes. And I wrote my term.
This is a horse girl podcast.
Yes. And I wrote my paper on the kind of thematic importance of horses in the Lord of the Rings franchise and followed like several
riders of Rohan.
Yes. And I followed a few different horses through the franchise about like and what their meanings were or whatever. And my horse teacher thought it was so good that she submitted my essay for a contest that I won.
Wow.
An essay contest.
Shadowfax, king of the horses.
Oh my God. I have so many
virgins. This has just evolved into us looking at centaur porn.
Oh my God.
I love that we can find a way to turn children's fantasy literature into a conversation about fantasy horse cock. Slide into our DMs at LikeAVirgin42069. Tell us, are you a lion, a witch, or a wardrobe? Which one do you identify as?
I'm a wardrobe, for sure.
I'm a witch, and Phoebe is a lion.
Yeah, you are a lion.
Okay, and next week we will be back with a discussion about everyone's favorite lesbian Christmas film, Carol.
Mm.
Thank God, finally, it's time to talk about The Girls.
The most important Christmas movie ever made.
Ever. So, until then, you know, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps us out so much. I'm your co-host, Rose Domu. You can find me anywhere online at Rose Domu.
And I'm Fran Tirado. You can find me at Friends Squishco, anywhere you like.
Subscribe to Like a Virgin anywhere you listen to podcasts. Leave us a rating on Spotify or a review on Apple Podcasts. We appreciate it so much. Like a Virgin is an iHeartRadio production. Our producer is Phoebe Unter, with support from Lindsay Hoffman, Julian Weller, Jess Krainchich, and Nikki Etor. Until next week, goodbye for now!
Nay! This centaur's pussy looks like an egg bagel. Literally.
Oh my God. It's like, I love the way she's holding her boob. Like, cause it's so
heavy.
It's so big.
So heavy that she has to. It's just a suspend. Yes, she has to. I love that this woman has to stand. She has to stand on a bucket to fuck the centaur because the centaur is so big.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta
right now.
Mark your calendars for the second
annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like $1 million.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.